Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgbeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgbeer.
Hello. We all have people in our lives with whom, no matter how hard we try, we just can't seem to connect. Why is it that some relationships always seem to leave us feeling guilty, anxious, confused, drained, and incompetent, while others leave us feeling validated, understood, and good about ourselves? Whether you're experiencing challenges with a partner, tensions with a parent, relative or child, or are struggling in a relationship with an overcritical friend or a challenging boss or colleague, today's guest offers a tried and tested way to transform the poor relationships in your life. Dr. Georgina Cannon is a board-certified consulting hypnotist, relationship coach, author, and lecturer at the University of Toronto. She's had extensive experience in helping clients reconnect connections with themselves and others. Her latest book, The Third Circle Protocol, How to Relate to Yourself and Others in a Healthy, Vibrant, Evolving Way, will give us a fresh look at how we can understand interpersonal relationships and gain some new skills to create a life of satisfying, loving, and effective relationships without guilt or angst. Dr. Georgina Cannon, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Don't you love that piece about without guilt or angst?
Oh, I mean, if there's one thing that's guaranteed to fill us with guilt and angst, it's our relationships, isn't it?
Right.
So right. Tell us, what exactly is Third Circle Protocol and why does it make a difference?
Well, it's a recognition that every relationship has an unwritten or unspoken contract between the two or three people in the relationship. Two people build that relationship knowing that they're doing what they need to do to keep it healthy, flourishing, and growing. So you and I have a contract of some sort. You have expectations of me, and I have expectations of you. And it's the same whether we go to the supermarket with the cashier, or whether we have a relationship of some sort with our ex, or a relationship that could be drama-filled with our team. This protocol really works because it consists firstly of knowing ourselves, our needs, wants, values, priorities, you know, what we're prepared to give. And when things go wrong, we can go back to the core of finding out what is happening in that third circle. Why is it not working? That we had an agreement about what I need, what you need, what I'm prepared to give, what you're prepared to give, and suddenly it's shrinking. So it's not doing it to each other, it's doing it to the relationship.
By third circle, you're talking about, you know, I'm one circle, the person I'm having the relationship with is the other, and the relationship itself is right. The third circle. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, most people do not think about what their goals and aims and needs and values and priorities are in a relationship. They just right. know when they're not being met. So how do you get them to understand them?
Well, I've found over the years that when things go wrong in a relationship, it's usually that one person doesn't understand the expectations of the other person or of the relationship itself. Can I tell you a story? A brief
sure.
story? I had a client, I have a client, she's a senior executive at a bank, very self-contained, very ambitious, very smart woman. And she's been a client for a while, and we've been working on various things with her. And she said to me a few months ago, you know, one of the things I want to talk to you about is that my husband is just not romantic. I don't know. He just doesn't get it. So I said, well, why don't you bring him in, and we can talk about it. I said, have you spoken to him about it? She said, well, sort of, kind of, but he's not easy to talk to. I said, fine, we'll bring him in. And, you know, I do relationship counseling, so come on in. So she brought him in, and I introduced myself to both of them again and said, so, you know, I'll call her Mary. Mary, why are you here? And she said, well, I'm here because, you know, there's some things I want to talk about our relationship. I don't think that John is as romantic as I would like him to be. So I looked at John and said, why are you here? And he said, well, because Mary asked me to be here. And she said it was important, so I'm here. So I said, great. Why don't you tell him, Mary, exactly what you told me? So she looked at him and she said, I keep telling you, I want you to be more romantic, and you're not romantic. And he looked at her and he was puzzled, and he said, I don't know what more you want. I bring you flowers every Friday night. I, you know, compliment you on your cooking when you cook for dinner parties. I tell you you look hot when we go out. What more do you want? And she said, she looked at him, she said, I don't like your damn flowers. I hate flowers. I don't want flowers. You bring them in, they die in 3 days. I just have to clean them up and clear them out. I don't like flowers. And he looked at her, he said, we've been married 14 years, and every Friday I bought you flowers. You've never said anything. And she said, I hate flowers. I'm saying, telling you now. Anyway, he got up from his chair. He was furious. He said, now I feel like a bloody fool. I've been doing this all the time, thinking I'm pleasing you. And she looked at him and realized what she'd done. And she shrunk literally into herself. And I said, Mary, why didn't you tell him? And she said, I was frightened of hurting his feelings.
Oh.
So he said, what do you think you've done now? Not only have you made me look like a fool, I feel like a fool. And she looked at him and she said, so do I. And he looked at her, furious. And then he started to laugh. He said, well, I guess we're both fools. And they both laughed, thank goodness. I thought they were going to have a fist fight. But they both laughed. And that is about not understanding that contract about what needs and wants. So what I did was I got them both to write a short list, 4 or 5 things each, that said what I need to make me feel loved. Mm. What makes me feel loved?
Yes.
And they sat and did that. And, you know, whether it's be, you know, looking at me across a crowded room at a party and just waving and smiling or winking at me, or when you come home, stop what you're doing, just look up and, you know, give me a kiss. Whatever, something small that makes me feel loved. And they did that in the session. And that is needs, right? That is in the contract. Nothing, part of the rule of this protocol is that you don't discuss, you don't say, oh, that's ridiculous, or I already do that. If that's what the person needs to feel loved and you can do it, you do it. And I said to them, now go live the list and enjoy. And it seems to be working. It's,
you know,
the contract. It's the agreement.
This is such an important thing. And, you know, this is something that I actually have known about, that, you know, what is it that makes us feel loved? We don't tell each other. We start, when we have a new relationship, we talk to our partner about all the things we didn't like, but, you know, in the previous one, or, you know, that they didn't do. But we'd never say, this is what makes me feel loved. This is how I know I am being loved. And we all have different love styles.
Totally.
That's one thing in relationships that I think, when people understand that, it's a damn sight easier to mend. But how do you, you can't go into work and say to your boss, okay, this is how I want to feel appreciated, you know? This is what you can do to make me know that I'm on the right track. How would you lay this out with a colleague?
Well, a colleague is different than a boss. So the first thing, of course, is to know what your own value system is. So if your own value system is kindness or ongoing learning or compassion or whatever your value system is, you take that with you into the workplace anyway, and you live that wherever you are. The other thing is you have to understand, and I spend a lot of time working with corporations and talking particularly to women in business, that your boss is not your parent. They don't care. They may care if they're nice people, but they really can't care about your kid being sick or about you being sick or whatever. You are the CEO of your own career. And if you're smart and follow your values, you'll stay there as long as it works for you. And then when it doesn't, you'll move to something else. Because you have to live your values. And if you live your values, then you will be a superb employee or manager, because you will have that relationship circle that's agreed to. If you live your values, somehow your boundaries get stronger, and people know that. They just understand it. Now, I had a very, very, very difficult boss when I worked in the corporate world. He was so difficult that when I walked into his office, he turned sideways because he didn't want to face me. It was very difficult. So if I had some really good numbers to put in front of him or some really good news, I'd just drop it on his desk and leave because I couldn't sit there and watch him because he just wouldn't read it while I was there. He didn't want to admit that it was okay. So I knew that. And as long as it worked for me, I stayed there. I think you have to know yourself first. That's the most important relationship. And then you build a contract, knowing what the contract is with the other person and understanding in truth that we want people to take us the way we are. So we have to take them the way they are, too.
You say that the center core of our life is affirming interactive relationships. In a private life as well as at work. What does that phrase actually mean?
Well, we live in tapestry. Well, I think we're part of a tapestry. I think that that we are reflective of the interaction we receive and give from others. It doesn't mean that we have to live according to someone else's bad temper, but if you work or live for any length of time in an environment that is unkind, then you feel it. It affects you. If you are cooperative and you live in or you work or operate in an environment that is collegial, it allows you to flourish. And even something as small as switching on the light in your room, someone else arrange that happened for you. So we have a relationship with that person who did that. It's that far-reaching. When we turn on the tap and we're lucky enough to get clean water, it's that far-reaching.
So you're talking about the fact that we are all interdependent.
Interconnected, I would
interconnected.
Yes.
Yeah. Do your techniques work with anyone, no matter the kind of relationship?
They work with most people. They won't work with someone who's determined to be ornery, for instance, but that's why it's very important to make sure that you're okay, that you are comfortable in your skin by working this relationship with yourself first. I do have a chapter in the book about working with the unloved ones in your life. You know, Uncle Charlie, who's such a nuisance, nobody wants to deal with him at family gatherings. Or your best friend who's got a new boyfriend who you really don't like, but you're not going to give up your best friend for that. How do you manage that? Well, you manage it by living your values. So if one of your values is laughter or humor, you will find a way through it. And if you really live according to who you are in the kindest, most respectful way, I mean, one of my values is respect, for instance. Kindness is another one. Laughter is another one. If I can handle anyone with those values, I don't get my knickers in a knot getting ready to go to see them because I know that I'm going to be able to manage it. They're not going to impact me because I know who they are, and I allow them to be who they are because I'm who I am. Is that making sense?
It does make sense, yes, indeed. So what do low self-esteem, procrastination, and negative self-talk have to do with the way we create our relationships?
Well, low self-esteem often comes from early life. It often comes, occasionally it comes from past life, but most of the time it comes from early life in this lifetime, where we somehow got the message, either from parents or elder siblings or school, that we were just not good enough. And of course, as you know, and your listeners probably know, that any messages that are given to us before about the age of 7 or 8 or 9 go in as the truth because our frontal cortex hasn't developed yet to have any thinking ability. So what happens is we take it in and we believe that we're clumsy or stupid or whatever.
We'll come back to this after the break, Georgina. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer and I'm speaking with relationship coach, author, lecturer and certified consulting hypnotist, Dr. Georgina Cannon, about her book, The Third Circle Protocol. We'll be back in a few moments after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Dr. Georgina Cannon, you were talking before the break about passions that are set in childhood, which makes me think about relationships with parents and siblings, because both, you know, aren't very good about allowing the rest, you know, other members of the family to grow and mature beyond those patterns. How do we create and establish a new relationship blueprint with a parent or a sibling?
It depends on what your goal is. If your goal is to be friendly and loving toward your parents, how you behave, if you behave as an adult, they will. If you behave as a child because you allow them to guilt you or bully you, then they will stay the same way. Having said that, if you have to move into a caregiver role, or they're aging, and you have to really consider about what the next steps are. This is the first time I will say that we don't only live our values, we have to take into consideration their values as well. Because if they are the type of people, for instance, who don't like washing their dirty linen in public, as we used to say in England, and you have to go and talk to some seniors' homes or some places or some in care, in home nursing people, they're going to feel very embarrassed and uncomfortable about it and may even resent it. So you're going to have to use yourself that allows you to be kind, compassionate, patient, and understand their value system. Not necessarily what they're saying, but their value system, and it will help you through that process.
You have a chapter in your book, The Third Circle Protocol, about kids. You say that this works really well with teens.
Yes.
You know, and I think, I can see the sense in that, because we treat them as children, then they get to a certain age where they don't want to be treated as a child, and we have to change things.
Yeah, well, they want some power. You know, they want to start earning and living in their own power and their own personality. So that's why it works so well, because when you talk to them, you say, I mean, I have a case in the book, and it was a little difficult, interestingly enough, from the parent point of view, more than the young girl point of view. When you say to the teen, okay, what do you absolutely want in this relationship with your parents? What do you need? What's the bottom line need? And they might sort of shrug and say, well, to be left alone. Then, yeah, fine. Apart from that, what else do you need? Do you need to be fed? Do you need to, you know, to have a bed to sleep in? Do you want a relationship with them? What do you need? And once they get it, once they start working it, they get very excited. And it's a real gift you're giving them, because they will see all of their relationships in the future along the same way. They will know what their values are. They will know what they really need in a relationship. They will know if they need to be heard. They will know if they, and if they need to be heard, they won't date people or marry people who talk over them all the time, for instance.
You have an example in the book of a mother-daughter relationship contract, and you say that it's important for the parent to always remember to ask themselves certain questions. What are those questions?
Well, the question really is, it's short-term, long-term. I'm trying to remember now. Short-term, long-term, this is a relationship. This is a new relationship. This is not my kid. This is the young person that's growing up who is stretching and being part of, and I'm helping them form their future. So this is really important. So what I'm doing right now, I'm turning to the page because I've totally forgotten what it was I said. I'm so brilliant. I write it down and I forget it.
Well, that's not difficult when you go on to writing the next book.
That's exactly what happens. It's really funny. I'm right in the middle of the next book. So what do you need from your team and what do you want? And what are you prepared to give to make this healthy? So what are the must-haves? What are the absolute must-have in this relationship that I have with you, my son, my 15, 16-year-old son who now grunts at me instead of speaks to me?
Mm-hmm.
What must I have from you? And what are the wants? What are the nice-to-haves? And what am I going to give to you, and what are you going to give to me that make it a comfortable, pleasurable relationship? And then we go on to things like priorities, your values. What are your values? What's important to you, my son? Is respect important to you? Is love important to you? Is education important to you? What's important to you apart from your sports and your buddies? What's really important to you? And we work it through. And sometimes I have to see the teen separately, because if they see the parent there, they'll say what they think the parent wants rather than what they want.
Mm. In-laws can often be a couple's biggest challenge. I recall when my former marriage was still quite young, an occasion when I was very aware that the decision that I was about to make to handle a challenging situation would dictate my future relationship with my mother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
She's 91 now, and I've been divorced from her son for over 40 years, and we still have a wonderful mother-daughter close relationship. It's so important about how we deal with those situations. In your chapter on in-laws, you offer an in-law appreciation chart. Tell us about that.
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to remember that you've taken away from the mother her son. And, we forget that. And as much as everybody's excited about the wedding, you forget that that's leaving a hole, because mothers and sons, like daughters and fathers, have a very special relationship. And we do forget sometimes that we're taking the son away from the mother. I mean, we're not taking him away per se, but that's how she feels.
Yes, that's how she feels, yeah.
Yeah, and feelings are real. So we have to honor that, and we have to respect that. So we have to be prepared to acknowledge that. And quite often it's a good thing to say that. You know, I want to thank you for raising such a great son who's now my husband. So one of the ways to do that is to make a list for yourself of all the things that you appreciate about your mother or father-in-law and how they contribute to your life or how they contribute to your husband's life or wife's life. And three things or four things that they did this week that made our lives better. And even if it's difficult, you'll always find something. It's worthwhile spending time looking for the good rather than letting the not so good irritate you. And that goes with the kids as well. You know, it's very important to talk and say to yourself, how do I keep this relationship with my in-laws healthy? Because they're important. It's my husband's mother and father. How do I keep it healthy? What can I do today that will improve the relationship? It's difficult, but what can I do? I'm in charge here. What can my actions be that allow this to thrive and grow, this third circle? And, you know, what do I really want from this relationship? Even if I want peace of mind, or I want my husband to feel comfortable that I'm talking to his mother. I mean, let's know what it really is. And it's up to us. We have the power.
I mean, in relationships like that, it's not often easy to get someone else to sit with you and create a contract. You know, you can do it with your partner, but with their, you know, family members, there's usually a lot of resistance. I mean,
right.
So really it's about changing yourself then in that
Always.
Situation.
Always.
Yeah.
it's about changing it. And it's about saying, yes, she's ornery. Yes, she's going to find fault with me. Yes, I don't cook enough. Yes, I don't keep my house clean enough. All of that. But what can I do so that the whole relationship is a little bit smoother? Even if it seems impossible, you'll find something. Even if you buy her some flowers and remind her that you're grateful for her son.
But what about those relationships that are really toxic? I mean, how would you handle that?
Well, first you have to protect yourself, there's no question. Are you talking about in-law relationships that are really toxic?
Any relationship you can't avoid that's toxic.
No, well, boundaries again. And if you're very firm and strong in your skin with your own values, you can manage it in a way if you have to manage it. One of the phrases that I teach my clients to use with people who are always finding something wrong with you is to say, you know, Uncle Charlie, good old Uncle Charlie, I totally understand where you're coming from. From where you sit, that makes perfect sense. But from where I am, not so much. But I totally get from where you sit, it makes perfect sense. And you can do that to your mother-in-law. You can do that to anybody. Because what you're doing is you're telling them they're okay. But you're also okay.
Mm. What advice would you offer to people who are left behind after a relationship ends? You know, the person who didn't want the relationship to end. Is there anything in your protocol that can help them?
The dumpy, you mean?
Yes, yeah. The dumpy. Yeah. I was trying to be polite.
Yes. You know, the dumper also has usually guilt, but the dumpy is not only filled with guilt, but they're filled with abandonment and pain and regret and low self-esteem and all of that. The most important thing is to not go onto Facebook and rant and rave and talk to the world about what happened. I think the most important thing is to find that part of you, that best part of you first, and handle the whole thing with grace as much as you can, because this too will pass, although it doesn't feel like it at the time, and I'm sure you've been through it. I certainly have been through it. And if you just hold on and handle it with grace and give yourself the benefit of time, and maybe have a close friend or a therapist that you can talk to and let it all out, but don't go and be vitriolic to everybody in public about this other person, particularly if you have children, if you had children with this partner. Because remember, every time you diminish the partner, you're diminishing a part of the child. Yes. And the children know that. They know that they're the result of the two of you. So every time you say something negative about their father or their mother, they will feel it. So operate from your highest self, your best part of you, your best self. And sometimes when I'm working with a client, I ask them to name that part of themselves. So if their best part of them is called, I don't know, maybe Clara or Jimmy, then I say to them, every time you get angry, every time you get disappointed, every time you want to burst out with fury, call on Jimmy. Get him to come in and help you. And it really works.
Every time?
Nothing works every time. Not even aspirin.
You're quite right there. How can your protocol help a reader find their soulmate?
Wow, isn't that lovely? So, yes, once you really, really, really know yourself and you understand the good, the bad, the ugly, and the charming and all the pieces of you that you've ignored, your values and your priorities and what you need, once you start living it, you will give off that energy. And as you know, energy attracts energy. And also you will recognize immediately if there's no connection, because every person we know needs some sort of growth or significance and connection. But we know that there are love cycles, and there are cycles in all relationships. So that first hit, that first attraction, stand back, even though it's exciting and, you know, the heart's fluttering and you're getting sexy and all the good stuff. Check that the values are the same. Check that your priorities are the same and that your needs are being met, what you need to feel loved. Be honest and open and you will find your soulmate. If that's the romantic part of you that you need.
Self-knowledge is a very good thing. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest is consulting hypnotist, lecturer, and author, Dr. Georgina Cannon, whose latest book, The Third Circle Protocol, offers the missing portion for successful relationships that many of us were never taught. We'll be back after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, you know, your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Dr. Georgina Cannon, before you wrote The Third Circle Protocol, you published several other books, including two on past life regression. What got you interested in past life regression?
Well, I grew up like you did in England, and you know that we are in a country over there where we believe in ghosts and fairies at the bottom of the garden and all the metaphysical stuff. So when I learned hypnosis and how to facilitate hypnosis, it was a natural step for me to want to study how to facilitate and help people journey into a past life. And I studied with Henry Bolduc, and then I studied Life Between Lives with Michael Newton. And it's just a protocol that helps people understand their patterns and makes this life richer. So I chose to do it because it was another way of living a full and joyful life in this lifetime.
In your experience, you know, in your clinic, do you find that that knowledge about past lives is useful in the context of the Third Circle Protocol?
Yes, particularly if it's about patterns. So if people come in and they have a pattern of being a victim, you know, they come in and they say, you know, I can't seem to find somebody. How come I choose losers? How come I can't keep a job? You know, I had a terrible life with the child. But they don't say it that way. But when I do the intake and I see there's a pattern, I find out, first of all, if that pattern is something that they understand or know about themselves. And I suggest that maybe we should just take a regression back to the time that they first became a victim in life. And whether it be at 2 years old in this lifetime, or whether they were in the womb and their mother was raped, or whether it was from a past life. So I do the regression that way. And if it's from a past life where they were, say, a slave or even a very wealthy woman in Victorian England where she was restricted with what she could do, they then see the pattern of being a victim, and we then work on changing the victim into a hero so they can change the karma, if you like, or change the patterning to something that works for them in this lifetime.
I should imagine that that comes in useful when explaining to people about the unloved ones that you write about in the Third Circle Protocol, the people that we're supposed to like and love but can't stand.
Totally, yeah. They're there so that you can use your best self. your higher self. Let's find it. Let's make it work, understanding that they have a right and they are entitled to be who they are, like you are. So let's make it work by using your best self. Think about what you can do to keep that third circle flourishing. Or know that this is a time that you don't want to. So if you're in a relationship with a friend that suddenly become very toxic or a partner that's very toxic, then know that this is just not working and say bye-bye.
Mm. How would your third circle protocol help someone who's experiencing a challenging time in their marriage? I mean, at times like that, people are often very resistant. They're in their own corner, feeling very separate and don't really want to engage in anything that is going to make them, move away from their position.
One of the things I do, because usually one of them comes to see me, I usually say to them, have you thought about what life would be like without him or her? And the first response is usually, oh, much more peaceful or much better. So, yeah, but what about the reality of it? What about every day when you come home from work and they're not there? What about when you have family situations and they're not there? Think about that. Would that be better for you or not so good for you? If it's better for you, then fine, we can work with that. If it's not so good, then let's find a way of making this relationship work.
Do you use the third circle protocol with pretty much everybody, every client that you see?
I do, but I do it with the relationship. So when people come in, the first thing I say to them is, why are you here? And then as we chat, I say, what do you want from me out of this relationship that we have right now? What do you want from me out of the sessions we're going to have? What do you want out of the work? And what do you want from yourself? And they look at me and they say, well, what do you mean? What do I want for myself? Well, you're going to be doing some work. I'm going to be doing some work. What do you want to happen? So, yes, absolutely, I use it. That
and
contract
do you,
has to be spoken.
And do you find that people then go on and make sure that they use it in every area of their life?
Once they get it, they get excited about it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I can see that this is a wonderful way when you're in a new relationship that you're really passionate about. It's a great way to get to know your partner and also create that, that dynamic where you are sharing with each other what you need.
I will tell you, shortly after I developed this, I was out on a date with a really nice guy. This is probably my third or fourth or fifth date, and I haven't told anybody this except my girlfriend. I'm telling you and a few thousand others. And we went to the symphony, and we were having coffee afterwards, and we were chat, and he said, Georgina, you're a lovely, intelligent, nice, nice woman. Tell me something. You can't really believe in that stuff you teach.
Reincarnation.
And I looked at him and I said, would you mind saying that a different way? And he said, well, all that past life stuff, you really can't believe in that. And I said, are you telling me I have no integrity? He said, well, not really. I just don't think that someone who's smart would do something like that. So I don't understand. And I said, bye.
Literally. Wow.
My values, right?
Yes.
So how can you even begin to have a relationship, as nice as he was, with someone who doesn't meet your value system?
Yes. Yeah.
You would always diminish it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That is definitely a case for, getting it up front with who you are, what you're about, and what you need.
That's right. Now, he has a right to be who he is, and he has a right to not believe in that. But, really, that's not who I should be with.
Tell us about the podcasts that you do. Are these free? Free classes that you give? Do you offer examples? What is their purpose?
Well, the podcasts and the YouTube are basically explaining the sort of work I do, and people often write in and ask questions, and I answer them on podcasts so other people can share the information. I'm all for spreading the information and helping. I really am. I think it's important. And all it needs sometimes is just a little twist on a point of view. And someone's like, oh, right. Yeah, how come I never thought of that? I mean, you know that. You do that all the time.
So could you give a URL out so that if any of our listeners want to go and listen to some of your podcasts, they can?
Sure. Well, on the website, my website is www.georginacannon.com. And you can connect to YouTube through there or go directly to YouTube or the podcast and just dial in Georgina Cannon. And the same with Facebook and Twitter. I'm easy to find. And any questions? I always answer questions. When people email, I either answer them directly or I answer them as a YouTube. In fact, I have a series called Ask Georgina on YouTube, all different questions that were sent in. Everything from I'm a medical intern and I've fallen in love with my surgeon. Should I have a relationship with him? You know, the answer was no. but it's a little longer than that, and I explained why.
When you first started studying hypnotherapy, did you ever imagine that you would one day, you know, be working with people on their relationships, becoming a relationship expert, so to speak?
I didn't imagine that, but I knew I'd always be learning because I've always been learning. You know, I've studied all different types of therapy and everything from Gestalt to chair therapy to everything and to cognitive behavioral therapy. So I'm always learning and I've always been curious. I mean, I started as a journalist, so the curiosity is always there. So I never knew where I was going to end up. But this is amazing, you know, to see that light in people's eyes when they get it and they change and they thrive. There's nothing better. Nothing.
I mean, it's very simple but very profound. I remember when I first came across the, this is, you know, how I know that I am being loved. And I applied that to some relationships that I'd had that hadn't worked. And I was able to see how much I misunderstood, you know, my former partners. You know, they were trying to show me love in the way that was meaningful for them.
Yes, yes.
But I didn't see it.
Yeah, you didn't see it. And you couldn't give it to them because you didn't know what they wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah, very, that's very why valuable. This works, because we talk about it.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be offering this, you say, certification workshop for professionals at your university next year?
In the spring, yes.
In the spring next year.
Yes. Come to Toronto.
Is there anything else that you're doing that people at a distance could benefit from beyond your podcasts and the book?
Well, I get people coming in from literally all over the world to take classes with me in hypnosis and NLP. I have people coming in from Israel and India and China and Romania. They come in because Toronto is a great city. So they come in and they learn at my school. I teach hypnosis at the university and I teach it outside of the university.
That's good to know. Georgina Cannon, I'm sorry, we're out of time now. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You can find out more about Georgina Cannon's work and books at www.georginacannon.com. You've been listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I hope you'll join me at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.